I think there's a common problem that we have as individuals where it's hard to live in the present because the first or one of the first things that confronts you in the present is yourself. And I think a lot of us have a hard time accepting who we are in this world. It's not like every dream we ever had has worked out. It's not like everything we've ever wanted has come true. Most of us are living, and I would say, yeah, all of us are living somewhere in between, nothing working out and everything working out, which means we're living in a place where some things work out. The other thing, too, of course, is that you can be wrong about what you want. There's so many people that chase fame and riches and all this, and then they get it, and then they grow a beard out, and then they're Jim Carrey walking the streets talking crazy nonsense, basically. Because everything he thought he wanted, he didn't. Because things that he had that he did want, he lost. And life has so many variables that you cannot live completely balanced and in control all the time. And that's tough. It's hard to accept who you are. Even right now, I was just, you know, or I should say, right before this podcast, I was thinking to myself, did I think when I was growing up that I was going to just be sitting in a motorhome, spending time in a vehicle that is from the 80s and having it for years? And did I think that this would be a large part of my life? No. No, I didn't. Never thought that that would be a large part of my life. I had fascinations with hippie culture of the 60s, and I thought there was something beautiful about living in squalor, as long as that squalor and that lifestyle meant living in the present. But life is different now. You cannot live like you lived in the 60s. Life has changed. The majority of our time, we are using our phones for things. The vast majority of us are using the majority of our time with a device, with an electric computer. And it has replaced so many things. It's replaced listening to the radio for weather. It's replaced listening to radio for road conditions. It's replaced the flashlight. It's replaced the library. It's replaced a TV. It's replaced so many things. It has replaced a lot of socializing, a lot of things that we had to go and engage with other people for. What's crazy is there are millions of people right now that are completely physically alone, and they are talking to somebody through Twitter or through text or anything, and they are communicating to somebody else who is completely alone as well. And we have these just little strings of connection, pulling and pushing, and you have this web. I mean, it's the World Wide Web. We have this web of nodes and computers and devices that are connecting us, whereas otherwise we would have no connection. And I look back at the world prior to low or no connection, and there was definitely a sweet spot. Maybe it's looking back at the world with rose-colored glasses, but I really think there was a time there before Instagram, before when YouTube existed, but YouTube was basic and nobody thought about it as, hey, this is my career. They just said, hey, this is fun. Where Facebook was just for basically talking to friends. And now it's just you don't use Facebook, or if you do, it's just people posting in groups. It's basically become like forums. It's basically become like Craigslist. Craigslist is dead. That's the other thing that had a sweet spot was Craigslist at one point. Craigslist was very, very interesting, and now it's completely dead because of Facebook. And the people on Facebook are, a lot of them are actually insane people. Because those people exist in this world. And they choose to spend their time on Facebook because it allows them to be crazy. There was a sweet spot with technology, but I think that there's probably a sweet spot for anyone's life, right? We're all born at different times. We all die at different times. But there's a sweet spot of technology, even for somebody who is twice my age. And that might have been, you know, the home computer, Windows 95. That might have been prior to that, you know, might have been before dial-up, when there was no computers, where you'd use the telephone to communicate only. And of course, there's lots of crossover in time, but I do think that my age group, millennials, have lived through a very interesting time of history where we saw the birth of the popularization of computers and phones and devices and spending your time on devices. I see people purposefully not allowing their children to have devices. And I think, is that actually good for them? As we continue in this world where the future trajectory means that we are going to be even tied more deeply with our devices, where it's going to be more seamless. Are you putting them at a disadvantage because you're not supplying them the training to adapt to that world that they're existing in, that they're going to exist in, because of your ideology, thinking that there was a sweet spot of technology and that it was in your life? You know, I think it's very difficult to raise yourself or to raise someone younger than you, that you've created or not, in this world. It's very tough to prepare them for the future because the future is so uncertain. And all you can do is speculate. All you can do is guess. Maybe it is better to have them not know how to use devices from a young age. Maybe it is important to limit their exposure to that. Maybe there is some real need to live in this physical world and to understand it deeply and to not be spending a lot of your early childhood or so on in the world of the device. I'm sure there's been studies done, but this is something that's progressing as technology progresses. You could do a study, but then, you know, the landscape changes and that study, the variable within that study has changed, so it is no longer accurate. You can hear anecdotally that people in Silicon Valley don't give their kids iPads. They might be the ones making the iPads or designing a feature within them or whatever, you know. But they don't give their children that. Now, how true is that? I don't know. I'm sure it was just reported on that there was a slight movement in people who just thought, oh, well, maybe this isn't a good idea. And it's just a way of raising your kid, and it was a fad, or perhaps just something reported on that grew, like a little tiny movement, even if it wasn't purposeful. It's very easy to worry about the world and to worry about the future. I mean, how many people have anxiety? And anxiety can be defined very roughly and very generally as worry for the future. There's this thing that people like to say, which is depression is thinking about the past, anxiety is thinking about the future. Now, I think it needs to be more expanded on and more geared specifically to the individual, but if we talk in these general terms, I think it's very easy to understand why somebody would have anxiety if anxiety is worrying about the future. You can buy the, you know, recycled toilet paper, the organic vegetables. You can drive an electric car. You could not drive at all. You could do all sorts of things to minimize your impact, and yet it will change almost nothing. You know, we talk about the butterfly effect of, you know, the wind rustling a butterfly's wings and the butterfly flying a certain way, and then that affecting future hurricanes or something like that. You know, it's like the example of something very small in the past, a change that is small in the past can affect things greatly in the future. And that is definitely true. But it's more so true on an individual life, because you have the most effect within your own individual life. It is true in the grand scheme of things. If you don't eat meat, there will be less demand for meat at your local grocery store that you used to buy meat at. And that means the person producing the animals for that meat will have less sales. There'll be more, you know, either be getting expired or not getting sold at all. And there will be less demand. But you as an individual have very little effect on that whole system. Collectively, we have huge impacts on the systems that we create in this world and that we service. Because somebody will only do something for someone else if that other person is willing to pay for it. In a global kind of commerce way, of course. So it can feel very futile to try to change the future. It can be very futile to do much when you see so many other people doing so little. You know, they fly in jets all the time. They travel all over. They eat lavishly. They eat exotically. You know, they do whatever. They have a lavish lifestyle. You're going to create a larger carbon footprint. You're going to affect the world in a much greater way. You know, if you go down this reductive kind of path and you become an extremist, a climate extremist, you might think that you as an individual is better off dead, because then you have the least amount of effect on the world. Or others might, you know, you can become radicalized and you can think that others, I mean, this is an extreme way, but that others need to change their ways, and you're going to try to force them to do so. I think there are a lot of protests in the world that don't understand why something is the way it is. You know, like for instance, there was the protest, I don't know, a year or two ago, I guess, in Germany over the reopening of coal plants. Well, why did Germany have to do that? Why did Germany think they had to reopen their coal plants for electricity? Because they were not allowed to buy natural gas from Russia, because there is regulation on nuclear power plants, because they didn't invest in enough alternative energies, because of so many other things. Now, stopping the opening of the coal plant, you're there right at the end when you're trying to stop a boulder, right? The snowball, the small snowball in the past of regulation being too tight, of dependence being too much on one, of all these different little choices. Those are just a snowball. But that snowball is rolling downhill because it's from the past and it's coming into the future. And just as the butterfly wing can create the hurricane, the small choices in the past can create bigger effects in the future. So by the time you're standing in front of the gate at the coal plant saying, you can't open, don't open, like, we'll stand in front, we'll get arrested, all this, you're standing in front of a boulder instead of a snowball. There are so many things that we need to preemptively do. It's like this quote that I love, which is from first time I heard it was on this song of this CD that I got at like a thrift store. And it's of this British Columbia local band called The Anglers. And in it, he has this one lyric that says, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's true. That is one of those truisms that I believe in. It's one of those things that I believe in. There are lots of things in this world that people choose to believe in. There are lots of things that they subconsciously believe in. That is one that I have seen a lot of evidence for, that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Now, where that can trip up is if you are worried about all of this pain that you're going to experience in the future, and you are trying to prevent that, if you don't actually know what the problem is, you could use a pound of cure on things that will never come to be. You can solve problems in your mind. You can solve the anxiety problems that you have and still not actually be solving why you're anxious. You could have, like, that's the thing, is like when you're in an anxious state, somebody can be very logical to you and it still isn't what you need. You don't need to actually solve the problem. It's deeper. So anxiety and the future. These are things that, I mean, this comes back to it so many times in my podcast. I could just say this every single podcast, I think, and it would hit home for a lot of us. But it's important to know what we cannot control, so that basically we don't have to ignore what we can't control. We can know about what we can't control. And in fact, it's better to know about it and to know that we can't control it. What happens is people become fixated on knowing about things they can't control. And there's a certain degree, there's a certain level you hit where you need to know what's going on. You need to know what's going on in the greater world. But your effect on that stuff is very little, so you cannot become obsessed with it. You cannot become just fully engrossed in it, and you especially cannot act on it. You cannot be replying to people on Twitter about politics. You are making no difference in the world from doing so. You are having no change because you are not in control of anything, and you have no effect of changing those people's minds. Now, it can be argued about if you're an influencer and you could have some sway or something like that, but why are you trying to influence somebody, and why is that person influenced by you? Why are they susceptible to being told something from you and then doing it? That seems weird to me. I should hope that the people listening and watching this listen to what I say and disagree with it sometimes and just think of it as a conversation. I like that. Oh, I really like that. And if this is a conversation, then I say, let the conversation begin. That's my Garth Brooks. No, but you should think of it as a conversation. You can walk away from a conversation and be like, well, that person was very insightful. That was a very good conversation. I enjoyed that. You can walk away from a conversation and be like, that person, I disagree with them. That person is completely different to me. They think differently than I do. You can walk away from a conversation and think, I'm going to implement that. I'm going to do that, or I'm not going to do this. And that's how you should be relating to influencers. And that's how I hope people are relating to this podcast. And if somebody's advertising something, they most likely don't give a fuck about it. They are advertising it because they're making money from doing it. So know that. Know that basically advertisements are ridiculous. They're just trying to be information about something, which they are. They are information about something, but they're trying to seem interesting to you. And unless something is interesting to you, it's not interesting to you. I guess what I'm trying to say is tune your radar so that you can detect when somebody that you respect is actually interested in what they are selling, or if they're doing it because it's just a way to collect a little fee from the content that they are creating. Don't forget that these people are content creators and that they use their content to sell you something. Whether it's a Jackery battery, if you're into van life influencers, or whether it's VaynerMedia, if you watch Gary Vaynerchuk's bullshit, or whether it's For Hims, if you listen to any middle-aged two dudes shitting around podcast, because that's the audience, I guess. It's men losing their hair and needing boner pills. That listen to that. I don't know. You know, they choose their demographics, I guess. The advertisers do. With all that being said, I think you can tell that when I talk about my book that I'm trying to sell on here, I'm trying to sell it. I mean, that's what I want, is to be able to sell this book, to make a little bit of money from this content that I create and from doing this, because this is something that I love to do and I would love to be able to do it and make enough money from doing it. And my book is tied into that. I think if you read my book, you'll understand my podcast. If you listen to my podcast, you'll understand my book. So that's why I'm advertising it, is I think it's a good fit to the listeners. I think anyone listening to this now would find my book good and interesting. That's why I'm selling it. And it's something that I created that I'm proud of as well. So that's important. You know, it's something that I actually think is good. I need a thesaurus or something, because all I'm saying is good and interesting. And I'm just trying to get that across, I suppose. It's superb and intriguing. It's fantastic and inquisitive. I don't know if inquisitive is the same thing as interesting. Probably not. Or intriguing. Yeah. So if you guys want to check that out, there is a link in the description. I appreciate that a lot. That's where I'm going to leave you. This is a short one. I like these short ones sometimes. You know, it's just when I get the point across, why am I going to keep rambling about it? And, you know, I think I do need space to explore this concept more. I think when I'm editing this and when I'm re-listening to it, I'll be like, oh, I should have added this. I could talk about this as well, or I missed this, even though this is something I thought. That happens to me a lot with this podcast. I'll do a whole podcast. I'm like, yeah, I really covered that idea that I wanted to talk about. And then right as I listen to it, I'm like, oh, I just completely forgot to talk about this thing, even though I have thought about it before. It just, in the moment, it's like the pressure is on to create as I talk and videotape this. The pressure is on to create, and I think that pressure sometimes blocks me from actually going deeper. It can, at least. So that's a little how the sausage gets made, how the steak gets cooked, how the potatoes get baked. It's a little bit about how the meal comes together, if this podcast is a meal. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Goodbye.